Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And here it is, folks. We've all finally seen the movie, even though we already saw it 2 weeks ago, but we're finally getting around to our Age of Ultron review. Yay!
I'm sure many of you were waiting for us to tell you how good it was before you went to see it.
Yes. I mean, that's, you know, it hasn't, you know, it's doing well, but it does not doing as strong as the first one, because everyone's waiting on bated breath for us to tell them if it's good or not.
That is the reason. Week three is going to be a strong week now.
Yes.
We're setting it up for that.
It's going to break week three records of any movie.
Yep. It's coming.
So what did we think of Age of Ultron, guys?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was, I think that they're continuing to show DC how these movies are done with the humor. That the humor is essential, and they had it going from scene one. And additionally, the other thing that they had going for us fans is the tie-ins. Like whether it was how much of it was intentional via the filmmakers themselves, and how much of it was, you know, the tail wagging the dog, and that the TV shows set things up to roll nicely into the movies, mm-hmm. is unclear. But it did. That had that had that cohesiveness. That if you were watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there was payoff. There were little bits that had more depth and more color to them because you were watching that show coming into this movie.
I definitely agree with that. You know, I don't know if John's makes it sound like he has been watching Agents.
Yes.
You know, and I was actually shocked at that with the episode after the movie that it aired the week after. Mm-hmm. The tie-in was really well done, and it was a huge payoff,
yeah,
like you said. But if you hadn't have seen Age of Ultron, it wouldn't have made 100%
yeah, sense definitely, to you. That tie was both ways as far as that was concerned, because if you didn't have, like, if you watched last, you know, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. before the movie, and then watched the episode after the movie, didn't watch the movie in between, which, who are you? then, yes, there were questions that were answered about the show via the movie that you would have been lacking.
Well, let's just agree that Marvel is doing with the movies and the TV shows what they've done with comics, which is you have to collect them all or else you can't follow the storyline.
Right.
If
only they could do it with the toys, too.
Yes.
I mean, I think the movie, well, the movies together stand on their own. I don't think you need to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it helps. No,
but the show gives a layer of depth. Like, they're allowing the TV shows to offer that additional layer of depth, both in story and potentially in the future in characters. Like, they haven't had any of the TV characters cross over to the big screen yet, but their potential is there.
Oh, so, they're using the TV show to retcon.
The
movie comes out. And,
you know what?
How are we going to get these people off of this floating island? Oh, helicarrier. Yeah. Oh, now, how are we going to write that in? Oh, wait, we've got a TV show.
Well, that's true,
they,
too.
They could have had that put together for the movie purposes long before they knew what the storyline was going to be in the TV show. And they could have, you know, basically that information could have come down, because Kevin Feige is the brilliant mastermind of all of this, you know, knows this is the story of the movie. And, oh, here's this plot point where, Nick Fury shows up with a helicarrier. We don't know where that came from exactly.
Right.
Let me leak that information down to Jed Whedon and his masterful wife over at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and maybe they can find a way to work that into the show.
Yeah,
and they did.
The payoff would have been better had we seen a reference to or heard somebody mention the helicarrier a couple of episodes or even a half a year back in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then in the movie, all the people who were up on it would have said, oh, wait, I know where that came from. Instead, they were like, where did that come from? And then you'd have to see the show in order to
Take that back. I think that's wrong, because they mentioned Theta Protocol like seven times.
You can't take it back. No. You can't take what I gave back.
Not, I'm taking what you said back. That's what I'm doing right here, John.
You can't do that.
Right, and it's funny, because that was another interesting tie-in as well, is that they kept talking about Theta Protocol for a while on the show. Right,
you had no idea what it was.
And they made it seem ominous, and that Coulson was involved with something that was dangerous
Mentioning that
that was the Avengers.
Their budget, and mentioned that it involved all these bunks, but what it was specifically was unclear. So, yeah, I think they did that pretty well. I think, yes, they buried the lead really well, but they had the lead there.
Right. And but we're getting a little off track from the movie itself.
Spoilers, there was a helicarrier.
Yes, spoilers, there's a helicarrier. Spoilers. I'm just going to say that because...
Yes, do not listen to us if you haven't watched the movie. If you have watched the movie, I'm not sure you should listen to us either, but...
Nice. So I will say this, it was definitely a fun ride. Like you said, right from the get-go, they had the opening sequence with them going after Loki's staff, and they had the Loki pokey stick, yes. And they had that great scene where they all splashed across the screen, and you know, it felt like something right out of the comic books, and it was fun to watch. But overall, and we'll get into the more detail of this. I don't know if it was, I'm not going to say it was their worst Marvel movie, because, you know, we still have Iron Man 2.
Because that would be a lie.
Right. Yes. But I didn't like it as much as the first Avengers movie.
You didn't?
Well, the first Avengers movie was just awesome. It's a very difficult movie to top.
True. But I think, and we talked about this offline. I felt like there were some lazy things in the movie, and I don't know if that was editing or writing.
Might have been editing.
I think it was more I have faith that it was mostly editing, because I get the impression that this, from what I've heard, the original cut by Joss Whedon was an hour longer than what we got.
Right. And I do know that.
For some reason, they didn't think we would have stayed long enough to see it all.
I think we would have all sat there for 4 hours.
I think, yes.
I would have sat there for twice as long.
I think they proved that when they did the marathons across the country, and that's showing all of the movies leading up to Age of Ultron.
Yeah, I mean, for crap's sake, if you get the large Coke, you get free refills.
Language,
yes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, another great point of proving the humor. A simple little thing, you know, like someone said, I don't remember what, but who said what.
Iron Man, I think, dropped an S-bomb while he was flying around. Cap responded with language.
Right.
And he followed up on that later. And was like, did you just say language?
Which he didn't get to live down through the rest of the movie.
Nope.
Very, very awesome. Convenient for the censors. I'm sure they approve.
No, but I mean, it was funny, and it shows understanding of Captain America's character. You know, somebody who is from the 40s got transplanted into the new millennia. That would be like that. You know.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, he's from a different era. You know, there were different sensibilities, and. There's definitely adjustment there. Still going on.
Right. What did you think overall, Johnny Boy?
I liked it. I mean, I liked it as much as the first one. Granted that there were a few things in there that I'm sure were just cut out for whatever ambiguous time limit that they wanted to impose on it. But, between all the action sequences, which were really good, the way they dealt with the twins, let's see, what else? There was the language thing, the elevator wasn't worthy thing. There was the my girlfriend's better than your girlfriend thing.
That was hilarious, the girlfriend fighting.
There was so much in there. But most of all, there's the elephant in the room. Holy crap, Hawkeye's got a family. Are you kidding me?
Oh, that was great. It's obviously an agent.
No, now, we want to hate Hawkeye. He's meant to be hated.
I'm quoting Tony. It's like, she's obviously an agent. That was some very little agents.
Yes, no, and it's funny. That is, you know, obviously this was the first movie, and we all know they're not following the comics, panel by panel. We all know this. It's the movie universe. It's its own thing. This is probably the first, with maybe the exception of how they handled the Mandarin. This is one of the first times where there are major deviations from major points, you know, things that have never happened in the comics.
Well,
they introduced in this movie.
I guess so. I mean, you could say they've been deviating from the comics from the get-go. Like, there's just, the time reference has been offset. The ways that things played out. I mean, Iron Man suits never looked as technically advanced as they did in Iron Man 1 in the comics until, like, the 90s.
Right, but what I'm saying is, and I understand that, but what I'm saying is, Hawkeye has a family. Like, that never happened in the comic books.
It did happen in the Ultimates. Yes. As a matter of fact, it's sort of a sore point because he had a family, wife by the same name, and three kids, although they weren't exactly the same layout of kids. And in the Ultimates 2 storyline, Black Widow turned out to be a double agent and killed all of them in front of him.
Well, that was fun.
Yes. Well, I hope they're not going down that road.
Well, that's the thing, too. Well, okay, that is, all right. That's the thing that's interesting about the movie universe in general, is they borrow from both universes in how they do the characterizations. And I didn't read a lot of the Ultimates, so I wasn't aware of Hawkeye having a family.
Yeah.
But
yeah, in the Ultimate Black universe, Widow, he's definitely more of just an operative, just the way he is in the movies. They borrowed a lot from the Ultimate universe for his characterization.
Right, but but Black Widow, it feels like they borrowed more from the 616 universe, because unless she turns around and betrays everyone in the next movie, which I highly doubt they're going to do that at this point.
It's unlikely.
They would have done it already, I think, if they were planning to do that with her.
Well, compliance will be rewarded, right? never freaking know.
This is true.
Although would be horrible, because then Bruce Banner's heart will be broken.
But there you go. Now, that's something, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that relationship existed in either universe.
No, it didn't. It didn't in any universe.
Yes.
She's been with just about everybody else, including Peter Parker, but not him.
But it's funny, though, because it did feel like the most natural pairing, honestly. I think they played it well in this movie, that they did, like, just by the way that they worked together, by the way they got to know each other, it did feel very natural.
Oh, yeah.
But they played it up in Winter Soldier between Captain America and her, too.
No. I took that whole thing as a friendship.
She kept trying to hook him up with other people.
Oh, yes. God. It's just that's a woman thing. She's testing him to see.
I think, John, no offense, I think you're kind of being a little sexist with that comment, thinking that just because a woman does that, that means she's interested in a guy.
That is a common gender bias.
Wait, what do you mean a little?
I always got the impression that they were just friends, even though we all know about the joke that was made by Evans
They got Hawkeye. Themselves into some hot water on that one.
Yes.
Which is funny, because I'm sure that Scarlett Johansson probably didn't care one bit, found it just as humorous as it was intended. But, you know, you get involved in these press junkets where you're talking to people over and over again for hours, you know, you're going to be stupid at some point.
But I think they well established, if it didn't come off in the first Avengers movie, they well established it in this one. No, they've always just been friends. There was never a relationship with her and Hawkeye. And then, but fans wanted it. That's the difference. I mean, they didn't realize.
The fans were shipping them all with Black Widow.
Right. And then, I definitely took in Winter Soldier. They were just friends. Captain America and Black Widow. This is the first time where it did feel like a romantic interest on both parties.
Yeah.
And I love the way that, I'm going to mispronounce his name, Ruffio.
Ruffalo.
Ruffalo. There's an L in there. I always
remember that. It's Buffalo with an R.
I love the way he played it, because he played it like a nerdy scientist who wasn't confident that the girl liked him.
Yeah.
And it's like, that makes sense. It makes sense for that character, you know?
So yes. Since we're talking about the romance, should we address the sexist elephant in the room?
Everyone's saying the reason Whedon quit Twitter.
So, by the way, to clear the air, Whedon has come out and told everyone that they're full of shit because the reason he quit Twitter is because he's trying to write and needs to clear his space. And yeah. Twitter is not the space for a clear, quiet writing space. That is a distraction. And so I perfectly commend him for making that choice. It has nothing to do with this, with the sexist noise that is going on.
Sexist noise?
Well, it is. It's noise. It's,
hey, I don't know what they're talking about. I mean,
so
you know, Black Widow kicks ass and she doesn't have any powers for crap's sake.
She does. But the thing
and Agent Carter for crap's sake. I mean, you know.
So here's what it boils down to. There are some people, so first of all, I know Dave, you don't consider yourself a feminist, although you are, just not in, you just okay. don't know it yet. So there are three types of feminism. There are actually three waves of feminism that, you know, there's historical context. First wave feminism is suffrage, women's right to vote, and general, you know, legal equality. That was, you know, the late 19th or early 20th century wave of feminism. Second wave feminism is, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, breaking down of gender stereotypes and, you know, equal opportunity. You know, third wave feminism is what we're sitting in the middle of now, where it's a lot more about, a lot of it is about like sexuality type things. The, you know, the ability to not be shamed for, you know, having, you know, being sexual and things like that, for, you know, a lot of the rape culture type things. There are some conflicts, though, in the third wave of feminism that is very divided amongst itself, that there are people on different ends of the spectrum. And I think a lot of the people tearing down this movie for being sexist are on the extreme fringes of that wave, in that they're basically giving it a hard time because they're adhering to some gender stereotypes when it's unfounded. Well, go ahead.
I think
I'm sorry, I dozed off for a second there. What happened?
Okay, well here, I'm gonna explain it the way I heard it today. Actually from Kevin Smith on one of his podcasts, because I've read a couple of the articles and I still didn't fully understand why they were upset, and they miss, and here's his interpretation of it, and I think this makes sense, and maybe it'll make sense to you, John. The scene where Bruce Banner and Black Widow are in the farmhouse in the bedroom and they're talking, and she reveals to him about, in that scene, there's two things that happen. She reveals to him about being made sterile and that she mm-hmm. can't have kids. But at and the same time,
herself as a monster.
Right. She calls herself a monster. But what she's referring to is the fact that she was a trained assassin and kills people.
Right.
That makes her a monster.
Right.
Not the fact that she can't have kids. But it was interpreted that way by a lot of people, that he was saying, oh, because she can't have kids, she's a monster? And it's like, no.
Right, no, it was the fact that she was willing to disavow the ability to have kids in order to be a better killer is what makes her a monster.
Right.
Yeah, and the training that she went through is the same that Peggy Carter had to deal with what is it, that
Dottie?
With Dottie. I forget what the name of that program was, but it's horrible.
They called, well, it's a Red Room, the Widow Program? I forget what they called it exactly. But yeah, so that there, I think a lot of it is misinterpretation of that. That's one of the things I've seen called out as far as the sexist thing. I also have heard Hawkeye's wife being called out as being a point against feminism. But honestly, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that's been divisive and dividing amongst current feminism, is like, it's one thing to believe that women should be allowed the same career opportunities that men are, perfectly, right. which is perfectly valid.
Right.
That does not mean that choosing to be a family woman to raise children isn't a valid choice. You know, the fact that she chose to be, like, a lot of people decried it as, like, you know, she's literally barefoot and pregnant. You know, what kind of, you know, strong female role model is that? Like, well, why isn't it a perfectly valid life choice that she you know, Hawkeye's out there doing his thing. She loves him for that. She's providing him a safe haven to come back to and a family that loves him.
Yeah, and besides, three kids or Ultron?
Yes.
You know, I'm not sure which is more perilous, really.
Yeah.
And you know what? This past Sunday was just Mother's Day. And, you know, I don't care what any feminist out there thinks.
We know that, Dave.
The hardest job on this planet is to be a mother and to be a good mother. And, you know, all that other crap is really secondary. Yes, I believe women have equal rights and they should, you know, if they want a career, they can have a career. But if they want to stay home and raise their kids, they stay home and raise their kids. It's up to the woman to make that choice. And by saying that they're less of a person, you're actually hurting your own cause, you know, because you're saying they don't have a choice anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think they're looking at it as an editorial choice. They could have, you know, Hawkeye could have not been married. Hawkeye could have had a wife who was also an agent. But instead, they gave Hawkeye a wife who was a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
And they feel that that was a writing choice, but which I think it was. But it also fit the story, and I think it fit the character. It grounded, honestly, I think it grounded Hawkeye in a way. It made him more interesting and well-rounded of a character by extension of, you know, the family that he has this whole dimension to him that you don't know about, that he has a family that you didn't even know existed, because he doesn't talk about it when he's out in the field, because
and he does homework.
It's private.
Well, yeah. And again, going back to calling it a writing choice is very important, because not only does it ground Hawkeye, number one, it gives them a convenient place to reset, you know, after their first defeat, their first real defeat against Ultron, a place to rest and reset.
Yeah.
And while this is going on, you get, a reminder, they're getting a reminder of what they're fighting for and, you know, the quote unquote American dream or, just, you know, and I use American Dream as a bad example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the ability to have that safe and secure feeling of that farmhouse of those, and have that family to come home to. And that's the point of the movie, is that,
we're fighting,
you know, what makes you secure? Is it this cold robot that's going to defend the planet? Or is it the people, you know, fighting to make sure you're free and you have that security?
Right. Well, and it's also a reminder of what they're fighting for. I mean, that right. is, you know, an example of what their fight is about, is protecting, you know, families, protecting American values, protecting, you know, the freedoms and civil liberties of people, you know, all over the world who can't protect themselves.
Right.
Something they did well throughout this movie, maybe beat us over the head a bit with it, is that they were constantly saving people. Like, there was no, you know, reckless Superman moments in this movie. they were constantly trying to keep, you know, rescue civilians and keep them out of harm's way.
Well, they directly addressed the Superman movie.
Yeah.
They Tony Stark sitting there in the Veronica suit, the Hulkbuster suit, grabbing Hulk and saying, "Let's take this out of the city." I mean,
right.
It couldn't be more obvious. It's you know.
Yeah.
Oh yes, yeah. Backing up a little bit, that was a great scene.
That was a great fight scene.
Not only was it an intense scene of the Hulk versus Iron Man in the Hulkbuster suit, but there was humor in that scene again as well.
Yeah, especially when he punched him so hard that he lost a tooth.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
And then he's got the jackhammer hitting him in the head. Go to sleep, 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 go to sleep.
That's great. Because, you know, the whole time, you know, even though Iron Man is trying to beat the crap out of the Hulk, he's only doing it out of utility. He would rather not be doing it at all.
Right.
And that comes across.
And you know why the suit, why it was called Veronica, the thing that was giving him the Hulkbuster suit, right?
I know. Yes, it was a bit of an Easter egg reference to Archie comics, because Veronica is the
opposite
of Betty, and Betty is Bruce Banner's old girlfriend.
Ah, I did not realize. Oh, okay. Yes, that's a good one. And there's no mention of. There hasn't been any mention of poor old Betty.
Yeah, not since the Incredible Hulk.
No.
But we're getting Thunderbolt Ross back in Civil War.
Maybe they can get Jennifer Connelly back.
Maybe.
Well, that's okay. Right. Let's save that for a second because I don't want to jump ahead to Civil War just yet.
True.
And then the other scene. Let's a little bit more back on the sexism scene. But again, I think it was great writing. Was Black Widow gets captured by Ultron and put into jail. And I think when they were complaining about that, they missed why that was such a great scene, because it's not the Hulk that comes and saves Black Widow. It's Bruce Banner.
Well, yeah, it's Bruce Banner who comes to save Black Widow. But then in turn, Black Widow, you know, is saving them all by turning him into the Hulk.
Right. But the whole, like, again, like I said, that damn shy, awkward
argument, yeah,
geeky scientist who was afraid to ask her out, you know, comes and he saves her and he doesn't turn into the Hulk, you know.
Yeah, but I think the complaint with that scene is that it makes Black Widow into the damsel in distress. It doesn't matter who comes to save her. She's the damsel in distress, because out of all the people that were whammied, she's the one that ends up in the cage.
But the story flow was such that it was natural for a character to have been in the position that she was in order for her to have been abducted. Second, yeah. If you'd given her another 10 minutes, she would have been out of that cage and all up in Ultron's grill. She would have screwed him up royally.
Yeah. It's Ultron's grill.
Well, you know, it's just Banner just happened to come.
She ended up there because she was confronting him in the first place. So it wasn't because, you know, she was weaker than any of the rest of them. It just is how she had aggressively gone after him that put her in that position to be taken prisoner. So.
Yes. So calm down.
Yes. Well, I think and to stay on that topic, the other argument people had was with Scarlet Witch, that her character was weak, that her character didn't really have a lot of strong development or a lot of great dialogue, which I'll agree with. Her dialogue wasn't great, but this is a movie that was so chock full to the gills already. I'm sure she had a lot of great dialogue written and probably even said that didn't make it into the movie.
Right. I definitely got a feeling there was more with the twins that was cut. And again, so what happens in a movie like this that is jammed packed with all characters that have been previously established, other than the villain and these two new Avengers, things get cut. And essentially, this just becomes a movie to put Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver onto the playing field for upcoming movies.
Well, one of them.
It's really hard to fit in two origin stories, or even one origin story for both of them, into this movie.
You know? Well, they essentially put four origin stories in this movie. Because
Ulysses Claw, too, yes.
I didn't even count that one.
Oh, okay.
Because you have Ultron, you have Scarlet Witch, you have Quicksilver, and you have Vision.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And Claw, so five.
That's right, Vision. Wait, what?
Ulysses Claw.
Ulysses Claw.
Oh, right.
The requisites Luke Skywalker of the movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that is one of the Easter eggs for all of our listeners, that not only in this movie, but in the Marvel Phase 2 in general, is that every single Phase 2 movie has had someone losing a hand.
Yes.
Which I thought was great. I hadn't noticed that until that was pointed out, but that was pretty interesting.
When you said Empire Claw, I thought Inspector Gadget was going to show up, but, you know.
Yes.
But next time, Avengers. Next time.
It was their tribute to Empire Strikes Back. And, so we capped it off with Ulysses Claw losing his hand, which will probably be replaced with, it's like a sonic cannon he has, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a claw, which, you know, given his name, would fit.
Well, of course, but, you know, then we'd have an Inspector Gadget villain on our hands.
Perhaps.
So here's a question for you. Is it just me, or was, like, Falcon in this for all of, like, 5 minutes and not even in any of the battles?
He was at a party, and he was at the Avengers training facility at the end, and that was it.
Yes.
Why wasn't he in the battle?
Because that scene probably got cut.
Yeah, again, I feel that was another thing that was cut. There was so much that had to be cut. Let's back up a little bit here, all the way back to the beginning. Okay? And I'm going to talk about some of my issues real quick.
First, there were the dinosaurs.
First issue I have...
We don't have time for all of your issues, Dave.
The first issue I have I don't know if anyone shares this with me. I really hated the fact that it starts off with it being revolved again around the Loki Pokey stick. As in, like, the first movie, the Loki Pokey stick was a big part of that. Now, all of a sudden, in the next Avengers movie, and I know it wasn't in it long, and there was something more behind it. It's kind of like writing a book about a guy who finds a ring and then making a whole series of books based on that ring.
That's been very, very successful. When's the last time a MacGuffin had such a great name as Loki Pokey Stick?
That's true. But I actually will contend with you on that, Dave, mostly because you're the one saying it. But I actually felt that while, yeah, it was, I felt it actually tied the two Avengers movies together because they were going after something, basically a loose string from the first movie.
Well, I'm sorry. Here's my question I have about it too, that I haven't gone back and rewatched all the movies.
How dare you?
Before I went and watched Age of Ultron. Because I only have the phase one movies on DVD right now. Anyway, I'm waiting for the phase two box set. What happened? Like, that's the whole thing. He has his staff. He doesn't have his staff at the end of Avengers, but uh-huh. They never really say what happened to it.
They don't have to. Captain America 2 happened.
Okay. I mean, I know they showed it in the post-credit scene in Captain America 2, but how did Hydra get their hands on it?
Did SHIELD take it?
That's the whole thing. Did SHIELD take it in Avengers, but they never actually showed them them taking it?
SHIELD had possession of it at the end of Avengers. In the cleanup effort, which was also addressed by Item 47, SHIELD took control of cleaning up everything from the Battle of New York. And so any alien items and things like the Loki Pokey stick would have fallen under their catalog and purview to take in their possession and warehouse like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. And and clearly, because of the events of Captain America 2, where we knew that apparently half of SHIELD was actually Hydra, they had internal operatives making sure that particular parcel ended up misplaced and was used by Strucker for some experimentation.
Really shouldn't use U.S. mail to transport Infinity Stones. It just it does.
But the important part is the Loki Pokey stick is brokey.
Oh, that hurt.
So you're saying it's the brokey Loki Pokey stick?
It is. And then you turn yourself around.
They go to Strucker's base. They get the staff. That's when we first get introduced to Scarlet Witch's powers, which is fine. I think that worked. You know how they used her powers in this movie, and if that they're going to keep that her power set moving forward, I'd be fine with them doing it that way.
By the end, apparently, she can use it to fly.
Yes. And then we get back to Avengers Tower, and I understand we're dealing with movies here, but that whole thing, like you and you agreed with this earlier offline, Ben.
I'll disavow all knowledge of it.
That the whole creation of Ultron seemed too fast and too easy.
It was fast and it was simple, but I think that I don't think it was wrong. I think it would be hard to do it slower. Yeah, essentially, it was a bit easy in that it wasn't something that they created, it's something that they found. It's right. Something that they uncovered. And I guess the questions that are left unanswered is what motives there were behind that. So Strucker had basically, you know, it was because Strucker had things going the way he did that Scarlet Witch stayed behind to whammy Stark, so that Stark had those visions and took the staff and started doing some of the things that he did with it and got into the paranoid state. So I guess the question is, how much of that was manipulations that none of the three of them had any real conscious control over? I mean, because not to jump to the end, but at the end we had Thanos basically saying he has to do this himself. Maybe that was part of his plan all along, was to basically get he knew the mind gem was there and he wanted to use it to let them destroy themselves.
No, his plan all along was to get the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right, that's and he why needed to Loki set off a really big beacon to point to where it was.
Yeah, but that's why. Originally, there was an Easter egg where the Infinity Gauntlet was in a background scene, I think, in Thor.
Yes, but and that wasn't the same one.
Hmm?
That's actually been pointed out that that's a different one. That gauntlet is a right-handed gauntlet, and the gauntlet that he puts on in the end is left-handed.
Oh, that's just the cameraman forgetting his angle.
Nope. It's actually been pointed out as that it is two and different confirmed. Gauntlets.
Yes. So that's Infinity Gauntlet 2? It's like a backup?
Yes, it's a backup gauntlet. You know, the Celestials have to cover their bases.
Yeah.
It's a showpiece. It's not the
but
real one.
There's a theory that the whole reason Loki got caught and then set off that whole series of events and gave up at the end and lost the Chitauri invasion on purpose. He did all of that so that he would get incarcerated back on Asgard so that he could then from there take over and get the gauntlet for Thanos.
But he didn't.
No.
And I don't think that was the plan at all.
No, I think the plan was for the invasion to take over Earth and destroy the humans.
I think it was to put the stones in play. Like because I think Loki's initial actions were purely just Loki being mischievous and jealous of his brother. But I think when he got to the point of the Avengers, at that point he was being manipulated by Thanos to get the Tesseract out of play and bring it back to him. And he didn't have the pokey stick in Thor. He didn't have it until Avengers. So I think Thanos gave it to him at that point as a tool to carry out his mission, to basically get the Tesseract and get it to Thanos.
Right, right. Yes, no, I think you're right. That's a good theory, that he knew that the Mind Stone had something they would find and determine that it was AI and use that to create Ultron or something that would end up, you know, destroying themselves.
That's a little far-fetched.
Maybe.
Right, but remember, Thanos's main drive is to kill people to impress Lady Death.
That's sexist.
But that's the whole, that was the whole thing. That's why he wanted the Infinity Gauntlet.
He has a lot of strange motivations. It's also been stated that Thanos has this underlying subconscious desire to thwart himself, that he wants to fail, which, I don't know, it seems like a weak premise. But
well, you know, you got to take into account, he's suffering from hemorrhoids, so. Why do you think he's been sitting in that chair for all this entire series?
So I guess
he wasn't standing at the end of this movie. So,
so I guess actually my one question from this is whether the AI that they extracted and that became the sentient Ultron, was that extracted from the mind gem, or was that part of the encapsulation around the mind gem? Like, was that the program holding the mind gem in place?
Here we go. That's part of my issue, too, is like, we're all comic book fans and we all get this stuff. But the way they did it in this movie, there are things that don't make sense in that regard. Because, right, exactly. Was it just the thing
encompassing?
Encompassing the stone, or was it the stone itself?
Right.
And why is it they make references at one point where Ultron is acting like Stark.
Right.
As in he had part of his personality.
Well,
is that possible?
I think
in any way.
Here's
because
why.
He ate part of Jarvis.
There's that.
But Jarvis isn't Tony. Jarvis is not. Just Jarvis.
It has to do with, so here's my, first of all, I don't have a problem with the question that I brought up. I just want to know the answer to it. I don't think it's a weakness. I just want to know. So in my mind, it's the construct around the mind gem, not the mind gem itself. It was essentially what allowed it to be utilized as a weapon for the Loki Pokey stick, was that AI around that gem. So I think what happened is, so that AI is not sentient, so to speak, on its own, so much as it's this, quasi-conscious program enacting around it. But, you know, Tony recognized the fact that it was so complex that it could easily be used as a construct for a sentient AI. And so he basically poked at it using Jarvis as a means to pull it out. But the I think the reason that it ended up being the way that it was is because of while the AI construct was sort of the programming pathway, the neural pathway, so to speak, or the neural construction format, he was composed. His memories and his intellect were built off of the data banks he had access to. So it was a little bit of Jarvis, but it was a lot of all of Tony's collective knowledge and experiences that he had cataloged. So, you know, that's why he was so, you know, so driven and parallel to Stark, was because most of his knowledge and was Stark biased, was from Stark technology.
For those of you listening to this, we'll be posting a flowchart along with this podcast.
Do you understand
so
what
you
I'm
can
saying,
follow
though?
Along.
Do you get what I'm saying, though, Dave?
I get what you're saying. Yes. I
mean, think about your kids. The things that shape them most are the first pieces of knowledge and experience that they have early in life. Anything that stacks on that can influence things to some extent, but it's less so. His first knowledge, his first foray into outside of his shell of consciousness was discovering Tony and Stark Industries and Stark technology. And then beyond that, learning about the rest of the Avengers and then the rest of the world.
Okay. I will give you that for now.
It's like Google's AI that they gave access to the internet, and it all of a sudden gained a curiosity about cats. It just makes sense.
Well, that's another thing. How come after he accessed the internet, he didn't care? You know, he wasn't going after cat videos or
cats. How do you know he didn't have a secret agenda to protect all cats?
Okay. All
right. It just didn't come up.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just kind of felt like that it happened too quickly, and it was too advantageous. And also, why couldn't they have thrown in something about Hank Pym in that? You know, if they were never going to use him in the MCU, then fine. But they're going
like,
to use him.
Yes. I don't know. I would have felt like a non sequitur there, honestly. I don't think it would have fit. For Hank Pym, I understand that you like the canon of it, that you want that as a fan, you want to hold to that. But, you know, you're going to have to let go of that stick, Dave. You know, that's not going to happen. And Hank Pym will get utilized the way Hank Pym gets utilized, and I think it'll be fine. I don't think he needs to devise the AI. He has plenty of other things to do.
All right, fine.
I will say, though, I did have one thing about Ultron that annoyed me.
One
major thing, yes. Mm-hmm. So he had the Beats by Dre cheekbones, which was fine. Why did they have to give him a moving mouth? Like, that creeped me out a little bit. Like, it didn't seem necessary or advantageous for him to have a mouth that moved like he had lips.
Right, and that's also another departure from the comics. They've never done that. He's always
had that sort of ant head look.
Right, right.
Because this is the movies and he has to emote.
And that's the thing, and it's like, well, why does he have to emote? Well,
because it's the movies.
But don't you think it's more creepy if you have a villain who doesn't emote?
Maybe. I think, yeah. I think, though, what I gathered from the body type that he built for himself after departing from the Iron Legion was one of utility. You know, something big and strong and flexible and powerful to suit his needs. With that, what's the utility in a mouth that moves? I don't know if there is one. There really isn't. I think the Beats by Dre speakers would have just done just fine.
Right, right. No, I mean, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, there's no need for it. It's just like, it's just a visual thing. They, you know, the director made that choice. You know, oh, I want to have him emote. And it's like, yeah, but why?
Well, James Spader was playing, you know, the guy. He was playing Ultron, and you know, if you know anything, Daniel from Stargate is a very emotional person, and so they had to give him some way to bring that out.
You're saying that I think he was emoting more, whatever his character is from The Blacklist, than Daniel from Stargate.
I think he was channeling kind of both of them.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of Blaine from Pretty in Pink.
That's all well and good, but he's playing a robot, people.
Yes. Well, no, I think it's actually perfectly fair for Ultron to have an emotional range, because that's part of his flaw. Like, whether he sees it or not.
No, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying he's playing a robot, so he doesn't need, we don't need to see his face express emotion.
So you're saying it's more Alan Shore from Boston Legal?
Maybe, yes. Good pull there, John. Good work looking stuff up on IMDb.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No. John is a Spader completist.
Yes. I love Daniel.
He's a Spadehead.
Sorry, yeah.
He's a Spader?
I'm a Stargator. But anyway, so fine. What about the Vision?
Yes, I was just going to say the same thing. I think we should talk a little bit about the Vision.
Oh my God, I'm thinking like you now. That's so good.
I'm frightened, gentlemen.
Yeah, I need a shot. Okay.
So for one, I thought the way that they arrived at Vision was interesting. The fact that it was essentially utilizing Helen Cho's technology for repairing human tissue and hybridizing it with vibranium to make essentially an android, a hemi-human hybrid android body. And he is partially human. That's an interesting thing with it. He's not completely a robot. He has human cells. And that begs a question that didn't get answered. Whose DNA does he have?
That's a good question. So I would have to think he has Stan Lee's DNA.
One of the conversations my kids and I had about him is like, they didn't notice right away. When we first see Vision and he comes out of his cocoon, he's essentially naked at first. Like, he comes out all pink and pale yellow.
You did cover your children's eyes at that point, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
They need to learn about these things somehow.
I don't think he had a Loki pokey stick.
He did not. He did not. I looked very closely. No, just kidding. But the way I interpreted that body is essentially it was, you know, the movie, I'm going to reference something horrible, the Green Lantern movie.
Uh-huh.
What movie? I don't understand what you're saying. You're saying things, but they're not making sense.
Abin Sur from the Green Lantern movie. When they studied his biology, like, he was all similarly magenta colored. And when they were studying him, they said it was all his skin was thin and practically transparent, and you saw all of his musculature underneath it, right?
Uh-huh.
And I feel like Vision is the same way, that he essentially doesn't need skin because he's partially vibranium, so you're seeing essentially, it's a very, like, Clash on Titan kind of musculature look with very little skin involved.
So wait a minute, you're that's more Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan, that's what I meant to say, yes.
Okay.
I misstated, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Attack on Titan kind of look, minimal skin look, is what we have in this Vision, but it's has that sheen because it's semi metallic as well.
So what you're saying is he shouldn't stand out in the rain.
He might rust.
Though. It's a vibranium alloy. He won't rust.
Oh, okay, good.
It's not reactive. I did feel that the costume that he eventually put on, while it is essentially a version of Vision's costume, he was almost paying homage to the people in the room with the way he adorned himself, because he initially put on sort of a bodysuit of green, not quite Hulk green, but the Hulk was there.
Then he evolved and realized it was tacky.
Then he went with a cape while he was hovering right next to Thor. And if you looked at the adornment of the front of the cape, it had this sort of gold and red sort of clasp looking thing in the front that had a very Iron Man feel to it.
And as the cape crew, all the fanboys could hear in the back of their heads the words of Edna Mode.
No capes.
No capes.
Yes. No, I think I definitely think you're right there, because they show him looking at, he kind of looks at Thor's cape and then puts the cape on.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, although his is gold, which is, I think he's trying to one-up in me. No.
Well, of course, you know, that's very important.
He kind of, well, that brings into play the other point. He kind of did one-up Thor.
Well, that's an interesting thing. I wouldn't say he one-upped him, but I want to say that was, I don't know what your theater experience was, but that moment when he's saying very humbly, I know that I can't do anything to make you trust me, and hands him Mjolnir, the theater I was in erupted with cheers and clapping.
Yes.
I was at an 8:30 showing. There was like four other people in the theater, but it got quiet. I think somebody stopped tweeting at that point.
Was that you?
No. I was on Facebook. Live streaming.
But I mean, that's a Joss Whedon moment right there.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Well, which elicited the later comment of, so if Mjolnir is in an elevator and the elevator goes up, right. The elevator is not
right. He can't be worthy because he's just an appliance.
But it is canon that Vision has wielded his Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
What's interesting too is that you can kind of explain it, since Thor used his power to help bring Vision to life. That's why he now, maybe he has part of Thor's power. And I
Mjolnir, lightning. I don't know if that's any essence of Thor.
But it's not a point of the power that he has. The whole thing with Mjolnir is he worthy? And it deemed him worthy.
Yeah.
He's willing to save life where he can and kick ass where he can.
Well, and I also heard it referenced somewhere else that the mind gem itself might be the reason that he's worthy. The fact that he is imbued with the mind gem as part of his essence. He is essentially, you know, the Infinity Stones are the makings of the universe.
Right.
And the universe is worthy because the hammer exists within it. You know, the hammer can't even have its properties without the universe existing.
True.
And therefore, it's above those rules, exempt from those rules, and is implicitly worthy.
Have you ever written for Twin Peaks?
I have not.
Because that is a really good line of BS.
No. He only writes for Twin Geeks. I mean,
we should start that blog.
Yes. Yeah, so,
I don't know. It's too roundabout. This is, you know, it's comic logic. He was deemed worthy and he was able to pick it up. Probably not even realizing until a moment later, because he is part computer, that, you know, hey, wait a minute, I'm holding Mjolnir. So, you know, plus it's a Joss Whedon moment where everybody's, like you said, it was made to make the entire audience go crazy.
Yeah.
It's also, again, too, it's one of those things where I can't wait till the director's cut comes out, because...
Oh, no kidding.
There are so many things that I feel probably need to be explained a little bit more. And I'm sure there are things that aren't explained at all, because, like, what exactly is his body and what's his DNA? Also, yes, okay, so he's flesh melded with vibranium.
Wrong universe, sorry.
Vibranium, but they never explained why he's able to phase through things, which he does quite a few times in the movie.
I didn't really catch that. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I didn't really...
Yeah, when he's fighting one of the Ultron robots, he phases his hands like into him and then pulls him apart.
Yeah, I saw that.
He punched him and pulled him apart. I didn't take it as phasing.
Yeah, no, he phases his hands through. I was watching for that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I saw too.
Because that's one of his powers from the comics, and I was waiting to see if he uses it.
I'm aware that that's one of his powers. I just didn't see it fast enough, I guess. I didn't catch the detail enough of it to read it that way.
Well, then you need to go back to the theater and watch.
Apparently I do. I just assumed because he has vibranium, he can punch through whatever the hell he wants.
Well, that's true too. That was well done. I think overall, I do like the fact that by showing us the dream sequence in the previews, they threw us for a loop, making us think things were going to happen in the movie that didn't happen.
Oh yeah, well, and they even showed, like, in the props that they showed earlier on, and like a couple months ago, the broken shield,
right?
And clearly that was not an outcome that actually happened in this movie. That was part of Tony's fears.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it was just stuff like that where it's like, yeah, everyone thought, he's going to defeat the Avengers and then Vision will come and save them at the end. And no, it was really about, and again, it's a theme that's kind of repeated from the last movie, and to a smaller scale, but about coming together as a team. you know, working together in the end to save humanity. And you know, and lo and behold, they won in the end.
Of course. So,
well, all except one.
Well, here's, okay.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
So that's the other issue. And I want to, and I'm going to pose this question to both of you. In the original cut, Quicksilver doesn't die.
Well, yeah, there's a cut, yes, where he survives, where he's in the end scene with the rest of them.
Right, he's in the end scene with the rest of the Avengers. Which also, something else came out about that, which I thought was really stupid. Apparently, Josh Whedon didn't want them to ever say Avengers Assemble in the movies.
Yeah.
That's why it's only implied at the end of the movie. And it's like, really? That's where you decided to draw your creative line?
But anyway. It's an artistic choice. I'm not going to fault him over that.
I am. Okay. Damn it, I'm glad you quit Twitter. Oh, anyway.
Oh. Hey. Lay off the Whedon.
We'll see how many of his projects he invites you to be part of.
So in the original cut, Quicksilver doesn't die. He's at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And I pose this to you and you to Ben, and I want to get John's opinion on it. My theory is that they offhandedly did a deal with Fox. And Fox said, because they both had the rights, they went, all right, Fox uses Quicksilver and the MCU uses Scarlet Witch. And even though we wrote the script to have both of them in there, we'll kill Quicksilver off. So going forward, we just have Scarlet Witch and you just have Quicksilver.
I don't buy it. Here's why. Because I think, you know, if that were the case, I think it would have been Kevin Feige calling the shots as to whether or not Quicksilver lived or died. And as I understand it, Joss was the one who was pushing really hard to make sure that he stayed dead. You know, so if other powers were wanting Quicksilver to stick around, those powers would have been the studio heads. Those powers would have been the people who would have made that deal. And they weren't making that argument. They were making the opposite argument.
Yeah, but I think it's all a dog and pony show half the time.
I think mom and dad should get back to together again for the sake of the kids.
Because I honestly don't really... The way that I see the Marvel managing the MCU, I don't get the impression that they're too concerned about ruffling feathers with Fox as far as those types of things. I think they were perfectly willing for, I think actually, honestly, the fact that they used both of those characters and both of those characters were strong was basically an F you in Fox's face. It's like, look, you think you can make a cool Quicksilver. We got a fucking better one.
Here's
and his
how
sister
it's
rocks. Rocks their, both of their socks off.
Yeah.
I think that's the most foul language I've ever heard you use on a podcast, so I'm going to go, language!
Touché.
So, okay. All right. But I don't know. That's just how I feel. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's a theory, but I'm not buying it.
I want to just end real, you know, we're going for about an hour.
Before we end, I want to say one of my favorite lines in the entire movie is when Hawkeye was talking to Scarlet Witch, and he's like, the whole city is flying. We're being attacked by an army of robots, and I have a bow and arrow. Nothing makes sense.
Yes, I think that was, again, going back to the humor, and not only humor, and it's something that we strive for on this podcast as well, is being very self-aware.
Yes.
You know, like, yes, okay, we're not going to have Hawkeye come out and just be some kick-ass guy with a bow and arrow. He's going to sit there and go, yeah, I have a bow and arrow. We're fighting robots in a flying city. This is nuts. I was just going to say real quick, get back onto to Whedon just a little bit. So we addressed the quitting Twitter, the sexism, the whatnot, but we also know that Whedon is also now walking away from the MCU. He's his contract is up, and he's not going to be writing or directing any more of the movies, at least at this point. And I kind of feel that he's doing this because I think, yes, he loves the Marvel Universe, and he loved being a part of it and creating it, but now it's a machine. And, you know, you hear directors and writers talk about this kind of stuff all the time, is now it's not just, I have total control. You know, Marvel's going to come in and say, oh no, we want you to do this, not that. We want you to, you know, this is the agenda we want done in the story.
There's too many people involved, too many cooks now.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, and he even came out saying that one of his frustrations was, like, for instance, the whole scene with Thor in the pool of water. That wasn't him. That was the studio pushing to make that a part of it, because they wanted to tie into Ragnarok. They wanted to promote forward.
Right.
He didn't want anything to do with that.
Oh, that's where that came from. That was out of left field.
It was. It was definitely out of left field.
And what I'm wrapping this up with is, so he has said, so he said something in the press junkets that actually shocked me quite a bit. And I'm brushing it off as, you know, him losing his mind.
That has happened sometime.
That in his mind, there is no tie-in to the MCU and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. In his mind, Coulson is still dead. And I understand from the artistic standpoint of, oh, Coulson's death meant so much in that movie. But yes, it meant so much in that movie at that point. We've moved past that point. They're a team now. They're working together. We don't need, it's not going to cheapen that moment if, oh, you know, we brought Coulson back to life. And the other thing that's odd about it is he was one of the biggest fighters to bring Coulson back for the TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you kind of notice that, okay, there's lots of references to the movie, what's going on in the movies in the TV show, but there's nothing in the movie that references what's going on in the TV show.
Well, and that's my hope and my question, just if you guys see if you guys agree or disagree with this.
Did I say that?
Now that Josh is walking away and Marvel also has these Netflix shows coming on that they're going to want to tie in, because my understanding, they're eventually going to want to use some of these characters in the movies. Do you think now we'll have more tie-ins both directions with the show? Will Coulson eventually reveal to the team that he's still alive? Because now it's Marvel's call, totally.
Right. Well, it always was Marvel's call, honestly. I mean, as much as, yes, Whedon was at the helm for Avengers and was at the helm for Avengers Age of Ultron, he still was the director of a movie, not the you know, he didn't have the keys to the kingdom. And the kingdom is very large. You're talking about Marvel Studios and Disney. You know, that's a fairly large kingdom. And yeah, he, in his recent statements, I think a lot of that was just fever dream and having too many sleepless nights and too much fighting with the studio that just made him ornery and start saying things he didn't necessarily believe himself. Because honestly, you know, I just pulled up an article from 2013 where he was arguing about how, you know, how Phil Coulson is the person to come back from the dead and be the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how, because he is the ultimate little guy. And that's what's going to bring it together. So he's contradicting himself by decrying, you know, by saying that he, as far as he's concerned, he's still dead. I think it really, I don't think he believes that. I honestly don't think Joss feels that way. I think he's saying these things because he's just fed up and needs a nap.
A little burned out.
Yes. He needs to take a nappy nap and cuddle up with his own little plush Mjolnir for a little while. And
that's what happens when you spend years dealing with the mouse.
Right. Yeah. Refresh himself. And after he gets some rest, go back to the well and write some new kick-ass stuff, whether, you know, for himself. And I think all will be good. And he'll get all this out of his system, and he won't say any bad things about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore.
Yes. So I think what I'm really saying is, Joss, we appreciate it, your time,
put
directing those movies, but we believe that, and we will miss you, but we believe it's probably time for you to walk away for a little bit.
Yeah, now go do the follow-up to Firefly.
Yes. Serenity 2. Oh, no. Dr. Horror.
All right. All right, let's wrap this up like we usually do with our movie reviews. Go around the room and get a rating out of 10 capes. We'll start with Johnny Boy.
Dow. I'm going to give it 9 capes.
Ooh.
I really liked it. It was, now this is with the caveat that when the Platinum Ultimate Omega version comes out that finally has all the cut footage in it with the Whedon cut in it, I'm sure that one will get a 10.
Yeah.
But for this one, between the humor, the in-jokes, the dueling girlfriends, and, you know, and just the action and the way it was put together, I'm giving it a 9. I liked it.
All right. And Benny?
I'm going to give it an 8.5. I think it was, I enjoyed it a lot, just like John did. it definitely was better than, you know, anything DC's got in the works. I'd say it was, I still think the first Avengers was a bit better, but I enjoyed this a lot. There was, you know, we also had Winter Soldier just last year, which was awesome, and Guardians. So I think it's stack ranked pretty close. I'll give it 8.5.
All right. Well, I am, sorry, I'm waiting for the motorcycle to go by. Okay.
That was your drum roll.
I think Spader made an excellent Ultron. I love the choice they went with on that. So again, it's a strong villain, which in a movie like this is important. The humor was great. All the actors, of course, delivered as usual. There wasn't anyone that was like, eh, that didn't work. But again, I think because of the cut and just some of the, you know, little elements like that, I'm going to go against you guys a little bit. I'm going to go a little lower than you, Ben. I'm going to say an 8.
Scandal.
But I will re-review it and give it a new number when the director's cut comes out, because it will probably go up at that point.
Yeah, same here.
You know, I liked Winter Soldier better. I'm sorry. So, you know, that was more my cup of tea, I think, then. So we'll have to see, you know. I can't wait for Civil War at this point. So,
yeah.
I think that's going to be Age of Ultron on steroids. So we shall see.
Yeah, well, it pretty much has everyone from this movie in it. So
yes. Oh yeah. Well, except with, and I think that's, we didn't talk about that. Just real quick, at the end, the Hulk goes into a Quinjet and flies away.
Yes, the Hulk flew the Quinjet.
Right. Yeah. Which was again one of my issues. But that's,
well, he's smarter than he looks.
No,
well,
that's the whole point. Unless he's Gray Hulk, but.
The whole point is that the Hulk has always been able to talk in the comic books, and the fact that they're still showing him as a mindless brute is driving me nuts. I want the Hulk from the comic books to finally be shown on the big screen. But, so he flies away at the end and ends up in Tahiti or something, which, because...
Tahiti?
In the Civil War comic book, they got rid of Hulk. We won't get into those nerdy details at the moment, because he was a loose cannon that would have affected the outcome of the, you know, Civil War. So for the story purpose, they got rid of him. They did the same exact thing in this movie, I think, as they were taking him away from the playing field for Civil War. I really feel that's, you know, they did that on purpose.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think he's gone for good.
For good, but he's not going to be in that movie. I guarantee it.
Otherwise, it'd be less Civil War and more Hulk smash.
Right.
I think he might still potentially be back for that.
I will bet. Okay, you are all witnessed. Everyone listening to this.
All four of you.
I'm making a bet.
That's my
one. Ben right now, a gentleman's bet of $1 that he won't be in Civil War.
A dollar? You guys are cheap.
Yes, I'm very cheap. Unless, you know, Ben wants to up it, but, you know.
$1.50.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll have to wait a year to see who's right. But until then,
first time.
Don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
Okay, now it's my turn. Okay, what are you doing? Taking over Dad's mic so I can be part of superhero speak. Duh. Well, there are better ways to join the conversation. Really? Like what? Well, you can interact with them on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and even Pinterest. Wait, people use Pinterest? And what's Google+? I don't know, something to do with circles. Anyway, you can also see all their posts, including comic book reviews, on their website, where you can also sign up for their mailing list. Cool! Yep, are you still going to try to hijack Dad's mic? Nope, I'm going to try to answer the Stump the Geek question. Nice. So who do you think would win in a fight between Rainbow Dash and Squirrel Girl? Oh, that's a hard one. Oh no, Dad's waking up. My freaking eyes!
Oh, what are you guys doing? That cape's going to get caught in the door.